every property now that I'm looking for, I'm looking at it from a sense is that after the renovation, am I going to be able to pull out 50 minimum, ideally at least 70K off the back of the revaluation? So I'm always looking.
This is Property Invest Story, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Taran Shum, and in this episode, we'll continue the conversation with mortgage broker Taku Ekaneo, who's learned that within investing, that connections are key. You'll learn how to use these connections to find the best properties for under market value, and how a quick reno can instantly increase the value of your property. Also, before we delve into this episode, go over to propertyinveststory.com and subscribe to receive your free property investor case studies, where you'll learn how to generate passive income from your properties. Go there now to sign up for free. So initially, was there anything holding him back from investing in property?
What was holding me back initially? Aside from having enough of a small cash deposit to invest in property, it certainly was, I guess, the mindset aspect or the fear of the unknown as such, because obviously this is the first time you're making an investment of this size. It's the first time you're going through this process, and I was going through it alone as well, and I was investing interstate as well to an area that I've never been in. So there was a lot of things I didn't know about the process. I thought the agents were going to play me. You know, they were just going to see me as a rookie, and I'd be, you know, played as such. So there was a lot of, I guess, fear going into it, and that's what kind of, prolonged my ability to go into the market and buy.
With a lot of trust involved in developing a portfolio interstate, Ekaneo had to alter his mindset in order to evolve his strategy and progress.
One thing that kind of forced me to adapt to it was I didn't see myself having too much of a choice other than to do this strategy, because as my mentor said, I wasn't able to continue to keep saving my way to a deposit if I had these aggressive goals as such. So I had to become comfortable with it. I also had to develop a lot of trust within the people that I was working with. So that was my builders, that was my property managers and everyone involved as well. And I had to, you know, trust the process and really know that if I was able to do these things right, then hopefully, and it would have, you know, it would turn out okay. And I guess another thing as well was just to cut out all the negativity, you know, because you hear these horror stories on the media, you read it, you know, in the magazines as well. So one thing that I still do to this day, and I have been doing for about 2 years, was I cut out any form of media. I don't watch the TV, don't listen to the radio, because I know there's so much negative noise out there and there's so much distractions. You know, if you're having a bad day, you could get drawn into one of these stories and it could be over for you. So yeah, it's really important to cut out all that noise and distraction and just really remain focused on what's right and what works.
His mortgage broker, Michael Sharp, was the person that he learned from the most.
I actually read his story on one of the publications, one of the property investing publications, read his story, and I was just really intrigued by it because a lot of things resonated with me and I really wanted to replicate exactly what he did, and he did in a pretty short period of time. His name's Michael Shah, and he's done this renovation strategy, bought in these blue-collar areas as well, and then just continued this process. So I reached out to him on LinkedIn, said, look, can I just pick your brains, buy you a coffee, catch up with you. So met up with him, spoke with him for an hour, hour and a half, and I said, just show me the blueprint and I'll do exactly what you tell me to do and I'll do it. and it just went from there pretty much. And then now I'm just pestering him every day.
But beyond Shah, Ekaneo has a team of people that he relies on to further his investment goals.
I guess it's a it's an always an evolving process as well, because I'm meeting new people every day, reaching out to new people every day as well. So my small network slowly starts to grow and grow as well, just in this period of time. But what I first did as well to build my network in Brisbane was I leveraged off the back of people such as Michael Shah, where he had a number of properties in the area as well. So I reached out to some of his property managers that he uses and the conveyances that he uses as well. But at the same time, I didn't just take his advice as well, you know, as the gospel and just went straight with them. I still did my due diligence myself and interviewed a couple of other property managers, if we're talking about a property manager here, and then made my choice off the back of not only Michael's advice, but also my due diligence as well.
That's really good. Might I ask who the property manager may be as well?
So I use Diligent Property Management, and they service all my properties around Brisbane at the moment. So they're a mom and dad team kind of thing.
Yeah.
And no, sorry, that's, I don't know if that's the word. It's husband and wife team. What I like about them is that, you know, I like this really entrepreneurial, having these entrepreneurial people around me. Like Michael, he started his own mortgage broking business, building his business. These guys, Diligent Property Management, they're building their own business as well. And I'm having good direct access with the business owners and the people that are making the decisions within these businesses as well. So, that's one of the things that I look for as well, I guess.
Awesome. That's inspirational as well too, and it definitely helped by surrounding yourself with people who have that entrepreneurial mindset and also can give you advice about business as well. As you mentioned, you want to get into business down the track. You know, it's already a good start there to have the right people in place. But if you've got your own property portfolio, you probably might not even need a business anymore. That could be the business.
That could be the business. Yeah, I mean, eventually I'm going to get into my own business as well, but right now, don't really know what that is, but yeah, it's certainly surrounding yourselves with these type of people, you're just like, you really look at yourself and you're like, look, I could be doing the same thing as well.
The buy, reno, hold strategy is one adopted by many property investors, but Ekene pursues his goals with a tenacity that outstrips most others with the same idea. With an unwavering desire to pull out as much wealth as he can from his properties, Ekene is on a winning strategy that he just can't lose.
When it comes to the nuts and bolts of it, every property now that I'm looking for, I'm looking at it from a sense is that after the renovation, am I going to be able to pull out 50 minimum, ideally at least 70K off the back of the revaluation? So I'm always looking, I'm going into every property saying, how am I going to pull out 60K or 70K out of this purchase? So with that in mind, that I do that two ways, buying below market value. So I already got built-in equity there, and then also manufacture equity by doing value-add strategy like cosmetic renos. I don't want to spend more than, definitely not more than 20K, but I try to keep it around that 10 to 15K. And the reason for that is I'm buying properties around that 250 to 350 mark, 350K mark. So for every purchase that I'm making, I need, you know, if I'm putting a 10 to 15K reno in and then also 12% deposit in and with closing costs and stamp duties and all that, I'm going to need about 60, 70, 80K. And hence why I don't want to overcapitalize on the renos, and I'm always looking for where am I going to find 60 to 70K of equity within those properties after I revalue it. Yeah. So I don't want to look at any big projects. Don't want to look at any structural renovations, because in the areas that I'm investing in, a structural renovation is just going to completely eat into my cash flow and eat into my equity as well. So I just look at things that are going to brighten up the place. You know, maybe I can do a quick value add, like put in that extra bedroom, which I just did on the Deception Bay one, and which I'm about to do on my most recent one as well, which aren't very costly, but improves the value of the property pretty significantly.
Great. It's really interesting from what you've said. I mean, the figures all seem very, very reasonable, and especially in the market that we're working in Brisbane there, I guess it's definitely feasible, but you will need to obviously look very
hard and look a lot to be able to find off properties like that.
Yeah.
I guess how, because a lot of the properties that you're finding is really quite undervalued. How much time are you and how many properties are you actually looking through to find these?
Yeah, I mean, when I'm actually in the market and when I'm really intently looking at buying something, because I do have a full-time job as well, I can't just be on it during the day all the time. Yeah. So in the mornings, I'm definitely on realestate.com.au. Even on the commute to work, I catch training, so I'm on it. Always set all my my Google alerts, my real estate alerts, so it's coming into me, into my inbox, so I can filter through quite easily. At lunchtime, I'm looking through properties and I'm also calling real estate agents at lunchtime.
Yep.
And then in the evenings, I'm just online, whether it be on realestate.com.au or speaking to other investors that have invested in the area, trying to find good properties and undermarketed properties. And then now that I've invested a few in Brisbane, I've made a few good real estate agent contacts in the area. So every now and again, I also get deals sent to me that hasn't hit the market yet, you know, during that 1 week grace period, which has been very helpful. For instance, my most recent purchase that I bought in Scarborough, I wasn't actually even looking in Brisbane at the time. I was actually looking in Adelaide to buy another one in Adelaide, but a real estate agent called me saying, we have a deceased estate, contract just crashed on it, we're going to auction tomorrow. If you're in a position to buy tomorrow, if you have finance ready for tomorrow and bid under auction conditions, you'll get it for a really cheap price. And then, yeah, I ended up buying it because I was able to get it for so cheap, you know. And then that's the beauty of having these connections built over time. They remembered exactly what I was looking for, these cheap rundown properties. And building those good connections certainly helped over time. And I guess that's one of the ways that's helped me identify some pretty cheap properties as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. It is so true. Having a connection to agents is so important, but yeah. Connections to mentors and other people, they'll be able to definitely help you and pass on. So yeah. I guess it's
I always
it's
get them on Facebook as well. I always try to get the real estate agents on Facebook. I'll try to get every form of communication. So, you know, your WhatsApp, Facebook, LinkedIn, and then of course texting and phone. The more avenues and open communications that you can have with these agents, the better it is, because you build a better relationship with them as well over time.
So, what exactly are the steps that you can take to be so successful at only 28 years old? After the break, we'll hear about Ekene's strategy on how he was able to buy more than one property, helping him create the current portfolio he has today.
I was able to find pretty solid rental returns in the area where it was going to cover all my expenses and still give me a little bit of money on a weekly basis as well. So, it reduced risks from that aspect.
As well as which personal habit he attributes to his success.
I always like to do is write my goals down every day in the morning when I wake up.
And finally, we'll hear what books he recommends for property investors at all levels.
10X book too. So
what a book. That's a game changer for me.
Ekene's portfolio is impressive to say the least. At only 28, he has the numbers that some of us can only dream of. But this has only been achieved through hard work after saving up for his first property in Brisbane. It took Ekene another 13 months before he had saved up enough for a second property.
I bought in a place called Deception Bay, which is about 45 minutes north of the Brisbane CBD in the region of Moreton Bay Shire. And identified that area as being a bit of a growth corridor. There was a lot of infrastructure going on, a lot of government, public and private infrastructure going on in there, like the rail link. And then from the private aspect, you know, there was extension of the Westfields, Costco, IKEA, Bunnings, they've all moved into the area as well. So a lot of things happening in the area, good population growth, and it caught my interest. Also, what I liked about the area was that I was able to find pretty solid rental returns in the area where it was going to cover all my expenses and still give me a little bit of money on a weekly basis as well. So it reduced risks from that aspect.
Yep.
So that property I bought for $232,000 it was a very run-down property. You wouldn't be able to live in it at the time, or you could. It just finished a lease and it was only leasing for, I believe it was $270 a week at the time. Bought that property. I bought it sight unseen myself, so I didn't physically go to see it, but I had my property manager and also a builder that I met up there go view the property for me. And then we put in the offer pretty much as soon as they saw it. I took a bit of trust in the feedback that they gave me and some of the work that needed to be done on rough figures. Put in an offer. So I initially put it in for $238,000 and then negotiated another $6,500 off the back of the cooling off period.
Okay, so we'll talk about Deception Bay and you purchased that sight unseen. Wow, that is a brave move.
Yeah, I mean, it was sight unseen from my perspective, but yeah, I guess I really trusted in the people that were going to view it, and that helped me make my decision a lot easier as well. And also, yeah, knowing that I was getting it for so cheap at the time, I knew I factored in a little bit of a buffer on the renovations that needed to be done, and it still stacked up as a good deal. So yeah, I went ahead with it. When it comes to the reno, so yeah, what we had to do was do a little bit of work on the kitchen, same with the bathroom, put in new carport, paint internal, external, completely sand polish the floors, and do quite a bit of gardening work as well. So there was a little bit of work that needed to be done, mm-hmm. and hence justified by the low price. One great thing about that property, though, was so we looked at the floor plan and the main bedroom. It was a really big bedroom. It was a 6x3 and he had windows on either side. So we identified that, you know, we could perhaps turn this into just put in a divider wall, put in an alcove with a door and turn this into a 4-bedder. So put in an extra bedroom, which would have easily bumped up the rent, which it did, to $340. So $70 more after the reno to what it was renting for. And it improved the value of the property as well when it came time for revaluation. So that was a really good foray into the whole renovating strategy.
Yeah. So what kind of equity did you manage to actually get out of that one?
So we've actually revalued it twice now since I've bought it. And the first reval that I did on it was – it was only 4 weeks after I settled on the property, so it was pretty close within settlement time, and got revalued at $285,000.
Yep.
I knew that property was worth a lot more than that, but valuers being conservative, especially when it just settled only 4 weeks ago, these valuers find it harder to justify in their heads that a property's increased in value even after a reno, you know, 60, 70, 80K. Mm. So they were pretty much on the conservative side, and yeah, they valued it at $285,000. So I was still able to pull out about $50,000 to purchase
That's
the next
great.
One. Yep.
And what's it worth now?
So we just got it revalued again. I believe it was 6 weeks ago. No, actually, it was probably about 2 months ago now, and got revalued again for $320,000.
Wow, that's quite a substantial jump now since you've actually.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more equity for you now to play with.
Yeah, really happy with that one because I pulled out equity again on that one and then used it towards another purchase. So, yeah, it's been a little bit of a gold mine, that one.
The barrier of interstate property management was one that Ekinade had little trouble overcoming. Through trust and communication with his team, he was able to renovate his second property entirely remotely.
I really wasn't hands-on at all. When it comes to me going to view the property during the renovation process, I only went up once. Towards the back end of it when it was finishing, I'd have my property manager, though, throughout that period, go check up on the renos and see how it was progressing. And from a project management perspective, what I generally tend to do while I'm going through a renovation period, which generally lasts for about 2 weeks, is I'm on the phone with my builder once in the morning, just to identify from him, you know, what works are going to be done today, what got done the night before as such. And then as I finish work and as he's finishing work, I give him another call as well to just see if everything got done, you know, what didn't get done, and discuss what's going to be happening tomorrow. Every few days, I'll also get progress photos sent through to me as well from the builder.
That's so good. Yeah, it sounds like you've really managed it really well from afar, because a lot of people, and I've heard of stories where the whole project just completely went upside down. How did you manage to have a good process in place like that?
I always keep good lines of communication. So I guess that's generally what I do. And I think maybe my job might have helped me with that, being in sales. You know, I'm constantly speaking with new people all the time and, you know, having to build relationships in a pretty short period of time. And I think this kind of really helped me as well, because I was able to build a pretty good relationship with my builder, always kept on top of him, but without being too pesterish. And then also, of course, had the help of my property manager being on site there every few days.
That's great. Yeah, it's amazing what you've been able to accomplish with that. All right, so after Deception Bay, what happened from there? What did you jump into next?
So after that one, I bought one in, it was Kalanga. And that one, wait, was it Kalanga? Yeah, it was Kalanga. So that's also in the Moreton Bay region as well. It's right next to North Lakes. It's between North Lakes and Petrie, which is kind of a bit of a hub of the Moreton Bay region. The reason why I say it's a bit of a hub for the Moreton Bay region is because North Lakes has the big Westfields there, and then also Petrie is getting a new university currently getting built right now as well. So Kalanga's kind of smack bang right there in the middle of things.
Great. And was that another also reno for that particular property?
That was another property, another sight unseen. Pretty similar process to the first one. When I'm in the zone, I like to make, I don't make rash decisions because I've done my research on the area, but I make quick decisions. If I feel as though something's good and the price is good, I'll make pretty quick decisions. And this one was a little bit more risky in a sense that I bought it unconditional. So that means I didn't have a formal building and pest inspection done. And I also didn't have a finance approval clause in place as well.
Okay, so that is quite risky. What was the reason behind that?
Yeah, so the property, it came on the market. I believe it was on the month. No, it was on a weekday anyway, and it was on a Wednesday. On the market for offers over 265 at the time. And then I was like, holy shit, that's actually a really good price. Even at that price of 265, it was, you know, the property had been trashed by the previous tenants and they had done a runner on the property. So the vendor at the time was kind of stressing out because he wasn't getting any money from the property. He couldn't get it rented out because the property was trashed. So it was just costing him money to hold and he just wanted a really quick sale. Someone put in an offer on that day for 265. And then so I called the real estate agent and I said, wait, don't accept that offer yet. Let me have my builder go look at it tomorrow morning, first thing tomorrow morning. And then if he gives me good feedback, I'm willing to put in an offer straight away as well. So he met my builder, the real estate agent met my builder the next morning. My builder went to go walk through it. He said, look, the property is probably going to need anywhere between, you know, 10 to 15Ks worth of work, a little bit less than the Deception Bay one. And from what he could see from a structural point of view and from a pest point of view, it was all pretty clear. So I was like, all right, I'm just going to take his word for it. He did a good job on the Deception Bay one. I'll just take a risk. Let's do it. I put in an offer of 250, I believe it was. And then even though I knew his offer was 265, the other offer, I kind of sold my offer that it was a cash unconditional deal. You know, this was a sure thing. This was, you know, I wasn't going to crash on this property. I wasn't going to negotiate off the back of this because it's a unconditional sale. And I knew the vendor obviously just wanted to get out of this property and just sell this property. So I used that a little bit to my advantage and ended up having to go up to 254 and got the deal the next day. Yeah, he accepted the offer. So
fantastic. So by doing that, obviously you came in at the right time because you knew the vendor's needs and also you were able to negotiate to make it beneficial for you as well too. And a win-win situation because the vendor was wanting to go and get out of it, whereas you saw that there was a good opportunity to add value to this property as well.
Yes, absolutely.
So what kind of person can do this? What does it take to be a person who can run two jobs and an investment portfolio also successfully? Well, according to Ekinade, it takes a concrete motivation to achieve your goals.
Personal habit that's, aside from making a lot of quick decisions too quickly and falling into trouble with some of my investing decisions. But now I'd say one of the things that I always like to do is write my goals down every day in the morning when I wake up, and also in the evening before I go to sleep. You know, a lot of people, the majority of people, they just write their goals down at the start of the year and they forget it at the end of the year, and they were at the same place where they were at the end of the year as well. And that's something that I used to do, and I'm guilty of doing that. But then I was reading some content where this really successful businessman, Grant Cardone, he actually, he died by this rule, and he does it day in, day out. And it's great because you wake up with it. It gives you motivation to get to work, and you know why you're working because you're trying to achieve these goals. And then before you go to sleep, you're writing these goals down, so you're it's at the top of mind as you go to sleep as well. So I think it's really important because it cements why you're doing this.
So where can you learn the unwavering dedication shown by Ekinade in today's episode?
I guess if they're still not sold on the concept of investing or investing first, and rather if they're more looking towards maybe buying their own home first or something like that, I'd suggest maybe reading a book such as Rich Dad Poor Dad, which kind of flips the switch around a little bit, and it looks at it a little bit more from a contrarian mindset. That was a really good book when I first was starting to get into property investing. And on the other end, if they're already sold on property investing and they're investing themselves, then a book like The 10X Rule was a game changer for me. As I said, you know, really expanded my thinking, really expanded or forced me to push a little bit harder.
So where can you connect with Ekinade?
I'm always keen on meeting, networking, connecting with like-minded investors, whether they have little experience or, you know, heaps of experience as well. Would love to connect with you guys. So find me on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, just my name, Taku, T-A-K-U, and then Ekanayake, which is E-K-A-N-A-Y-A-K-E. It's a bit of a mouthful, but yeah, you'll find me.
Thank you again to Taku Ekinade for joining us today at Property Investory. We've certainly learned a lot from his strategy and mindset. If you want to hear about Ekinade's journey as a property investor, an Uber driver, and a salesman at only 28 years old, who already possesses a portfolio worth $2.1 million, then visit our website at propertyinvestory.com. Simply type in the search bar Taku Ekinade and select that episode to listen and learn more about his story. You can also get the full transcript and show notes on our website.